Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Chuck and Chernoff as we roll into our 3 o'clock hour on The Fan and The Fan mobile app. The 3 o'clock hour of the show is brought to you by This Stuff Matters. Listen to the new This Stuff Matters podcast. It's posted at 680 The Fan's website right under the podcast header or at thisstuffmatters.net. Let's start the 3 o'clock hour by saying hello to Carlos.
Hey, Matt.
Hi, Los.
Can I give you some advice?
I'll take whatever advice you have to offer.
Order her a sex toy for Christmas.
Any specific items?
Booby tassels.
All right. I'll put that in the cart now. Anything else? Sex toy coming your way. Thank you. The reason you're hearing Lois is Charles is still beneath the weather. That was Chuck's.
And that.
Was Chuck's it was his phone vibrating as we texted him nothing but good wishes. We hope he's making a speedy recovery, and he'll be back with us tomorrow. Los, I know for football fans right now, this is kind of a weird weekend locally that you don't have the locals Saturday. You're waiting 24 more days for Georgia, Ohio State. For the Falcon fan, you don't have the local NFL team Sunday because they're on a bye. This probably feels like the perfect weekend to go see Santa, maybe do some wrapping of the presents and finish up the holiday shopping, because after this, things are going to ramp up. And I know there is one thing, and this I feel confident about. This is probably the first time the Georgia fan will dive into a Heisman Trophy presentation and actually watch in maybe 30 years, because that's the last time they had one of their own. That was Garrison Hurst in the 92 finals. So if that's something to hold you over until the Peach Bowl on New Year's Eve, that's all I got for you.
I'll make it a point, because this isn't a... You know, normally I would say, like, hey, it's a pumpkin patch weekend. Well, there's no more pumpkin patch weekend.
It's a Santa weekend.
Go see Santa. That would help. But this is one of those opportunities where if you've appreciated what Stetson Bennett has been able to do for you, this is going to be, a 10 or 15-minute presentation where it's all going to be about him before they move on to the next guy. And I think I'm going to find a way to carve out that time out of my Saturday to watch that in appreciation for what's going on.
I like the way you frame that. You owe that to Stetson. If you're the Georgia fan... Who, and let's be honest, a lot of people did this up until the championship last year, and hell's people were doing it this year. We're still doubting and wanting a change, and this, you owe him 15 minutes to watch to see if he pulls the major upset and wins college football's most illustrious award. I like the way you put it.
I spent until the fourth quarter in Indianapolis where I didn't believe it.
You kept waiting.
And then you know what? He made me a believer. He delivered the coldest performance you've seen out of a Georgia quarterback in the better part of 40 years.
If you want to search Twitter, you will find somebody who tweeted, looks like JT Daniels is warming up. Like, that tweet was around during the national championship game, which I don't know if he was warming up or not, but that tweet was making its rounds. Now, I will tell you, I watched an entire college basketball game last night.
Weird.
I watched Georgia Tech in Georgia. I had not done that in forever, and I was semi-rewarded. It was an entertaining game. Jackets won 79-77 in McCamish. Game went back and forth all the way to the end. I didn't recognize what I was watching in a way that I used to, like, live, breathe, and just, you know, invest in college basketball, and especially Georgia and Georgia Tech. But for a night, it might have just been a one-off. It was a fun night, so that was good to see. Brent Key was sitting in the front row. It's a good crowd. Atmosphere looked good. So for a little night in my life, I got some college hoops back.
That is one thing that you and I have given back to the sports gods. We used to be so wildly concerned with college basketball and Big Monday and what are we going to watch this weekend? And that's changed. And I'm that same person now where I'll watch the tournament. I might catch a game here and there. But you got to give me some sort of young phenom, young star, somebody playing locally for me to check it out. It's just one of the things I've given back to the sports gods and said, sports gods, I don't have time for this one.
Well, I was going to say, how much time do you have? There's only so many hours and how many days that you have. Now, I want to go back to Stetson Bennett for a minute. Los, hearing and reading after the announcement that Stetson was a finalist, there's always Stetson slander. It's the way it is. But you know what this reminds me of when I was reading some of the things that I would think I wouldn't read from informed college football people? You know what this sounded like? Remember when Trayvon Walker started getting the steam that he was going to be the number one pick?
I remember calling him the number one overall guy on my board 2 months before everyone else, and I got the same treatment.
And it was always, well, look at his production. He only had 6.5 sacks, and it was the same thing you heard about Stetson. You're telling me you didn't watch Georgia without telling me you didn't watch Georgia, because the Trayvon Walker number that jumped out is he played less than 50% of the snaps. So his production was not going to be what it typically would be for a number one pick, because Georgia had so much depth defensively. I think the same thing is true with Stetson, that you see the numbers without digging into it, and you realize in the first half he was killing people, but Georgia had such big leads, and they were so good defensively, they didn't ask him to do anything in the second half. Tennessee, or against LSU, or a ton against Oregon, or a ton against South Carolina, which hurt his numbers, but you're admitting you didn't watch him by just citing his numbers.
It's very simple for anyone who says, well, look at this particular quarterback. He was on the number one team in the country, and he was able to get some love. These guys weren't doing it like Stetson Bennett was doing it. This isn't Ken Dorsey, where, again, a nice quarterback for the Miami Hurricanes back when they were loaded with talent. Ken Dorsey was just pretty much a bus driver. Stetson Bennett still makes plays in these games. He still scores the touchdown running. He still finds a way to fit a ball in there. He is doing things right now, in my opinion, at a pretty high level, and yet maybe it's only Graham Coffey that for the better part of 2 years, our friend, Dog Out West, was the only person telling you, here's what his deep numbers are, here's what he's doing in the deep passing game.
I love this humorous note making its way around social media over the last couple of days. Lamar Jackson won the Heisman in 2016. Kyler Murray won it in 2018. Joe Burrow won it in 2019. Stetson Bennett's a finalist in 2022. They're all the same age.
That's awesome.
Born in 1997. It's the greatest note I've ever seen. I love it top to bottom.
Well, we talked about it on Monday. The TV and the TV people couldn't wait to tell you, as the confetti's falling down, hey, Stetson Bennett is the oldest man to win a SEC championship in 25 years and 1 month. Like, yeah, but he still had to do it.
Yeah. I saw where Cole Kublik had some numbers. We always attach winning percentage to quarterbacks. Just the thing we always do. We don't say a defensive end's record. We don't do a running back. We always do with a quarterback. So Cole had these numbers on highest winning percentage for an SEC quarterback in the history of the conference with a minimum of 30 starts. Jay Barker, the Alabama quarterback, is the all-time winningest quarterback with a 934 winning percentage. Jay went 35-2 with one tie. Then there's Danny Werfel, who went 32-3 with one tie. Then there's Stetson Bennett. Stetson Bennett is 27-3. He's got a 900 winning percentage. Again, we attach to the quarterback, right or wrong. He is now third all-time with a chance with two more wins to, from a percentage standpoint, be second all-time in the highest winning percentage for a starting quarterback in SEC football.
So I was thinking about this last night.
The whole game is drunk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I was thinking about this last night. How you had Nolan Smith last year, who flat out got up in front of the media, and it wasn't just him. You had a handful of other defensive players when they were leading the charge, and they said, this is our guy. Like, this Stetson Bennett is our guy. And so they were early adopters. You give credit to Kirby Smart. He knew exactly what his team needed as far as, I need a playmaker who has a little bit of gunslinger, but not too much. Just so that defense respects him, and when they need a play, he can go out and make it. That is exactly what Stetson Bennett has been able to deliver for you.
I've joked before, he's got irrational confidence, which you want out of a quarterback. Like, he doesn't have the arm sometimes to fit the irrational confidence, but he's even limited some of that stuff this year, which is awesome. It is a light college football weekend. There are a lot of people who still dig into Army-Navy. I'm only bringing it up for one reason, because I'm sick. Los, have you seen the total in the game? You can say no, because why would you look at the total?
I have not looked at the total at all.
For the fun of it, guess what you think the total is for Army-Navy on Saturday.
Is it 34?
Lower.
Oh, no. Is it 24?
We wouldn't go that low. That would be silly.
I'm just curious. I'm trying to be absolutely ridiculous with it. 28.
32.5 is okay. I've never in my life seen a lower total for a football game than 32.5, and I'm sure there has been one. But they're just begging you to bet that over. And I don't know, maybe the game's 17-7 or 13-10, but I've never 32.5 for a total. 83% of the public right now is betting the under too, which I think is hilarious. Because usually the public's all about
overs. Bet the mortgage on the over, Matt. Do it this year.
All right. Can I have your mortgage?
No, get Hoyt's. He's throwing stuff around.
We'll get to a lot of the baseball stuff throughout the day. Kenley Jansen's inked a 2-year deal with the Red Sox for $32 million. Aaron Judge bet on himself, and it paid off for $360 million over a 9-year contract to stay in the Bronx. The Phillies made another move, adding Taijuan Walker, former Mets starter, 4 years and $72 million. Mets also signed Jose Quintana to a 2-year $26 million deal. Currently, the Mets CBT payroll is $298 million with the Jose Quintana signing. So everything they spend now gets taxed at 90%. Right now, their tax bill, if they didn't do anything else, is $34 million. And they're not stopping. Like, he's going to write a check for this tax of over $40 million and not care at all because he's a rich, maniacal billionaire. So the Mets are not stopping.
Well, the only team I remember who did this, and at the time it made sense, and now they've cycled it back around. Remember the early Golden State Warriors when they had the first run, and that team was so far over, yet the ownership basically committed $1 billion to that team during that run where, hey, yeah, we're paying this amount, but here's our luxury tax that also they were paying. It feels like the Mets are doing that, but there's no title attached.
Not yet, no. Let's hope it stays that way.
But don't even go with a not yet. I mean, yeah. I still like the idea that it's been since, you know, Ronald Reagan was in office.
I do want to mention one thing. So there are some Braves rumors out there, and we've been very clear when there are Braves rumors, don't believe much of it. there was a report from John Heyman earlier in the week. Hyman.
Either way.
Who said the Braves had offered Dansby a deal around $100 million during the season. Then there was another piece of news from Hyman that said the Dansby side had countered for $140 million. I don't know if that's right or not, but keep in mind, Hyman's the same guy yesterday who said Aaron Judge was a done deal to the Giants. So don't know that I want to trust the history of John Heyman to get this right. I think it tells you everything you need to know when Blooper, the Braves mascot, is trolling John Heyman. All he tweeted, Blooper's account tweeted, John Heyman may be better off for a new job. It might be time to find a new gig, basically, is what Blooper, a Braves mascot, had to say. Back to Dansby Lowe. If the numbers are anywhere close, I don't know if Hyman's right or not, but you're looking at the math of 5 years, $28 million a year, or 6 years, $23 million. A, I don't think the Braves will go 6 years. B, I know they won't go $28 million with Dansby. I think Brave fans have to kind of get the idea that those are the numbers. Bully for Dansby, be happy for him, but life in a Braves uniform will end.
Yeah, he's a 25, 27 homer guy with a gold glove and that kind of shortstop. While it may not get $35 million like Lindor was able to get, it may not get the $32 million that the Rangers were throwing out there for a couple of their guys, it still legitimately should be in that 25, 27 range. And if he gets to 28, see, here's the thing about Major League Baseball. It's the one place where you can get the money whip. In the NFL, there's a cap. In the NBA, there's a cap. At a certain point, somebody goes, I need to get this player. Let's hit him over the head with crazy amounts of money in order for him to say okay.
For the Braves, think about it this way. If you're going to make Dansby the highest paid player on the team, he's got to be your first or second best player. Or, I'm not going to say it's going to cause a problem, but it's not something you want to do. If we all said, and we all just said, give me your Braves player power rankings. In some order, you'd go Acuna, Riley, Ozzy, Olsen, and I'm not even giving you the pitchers. I'm just going everyday players. I think you'd go with those four before you'd get to Dansby. Maybe there's a debate on Dansby and Olsen, but I'm not paying him 27 or 28 when he might be the third or fourth best player.
I wonder about that because a lot of this is just timing oriented. He just hit at the right time for him, and free agency was coming around because you know, nobody has a problem in an NFL locker room when your quarterback is your stud and he makes $30 million. And when the receiver in Julio's making 25, you're like, yeah, he's a stud. He's a Hall of Famer.
But you wouldn't pay your third best receiver more than you're going to pay Julio.
And that's the structure of what goes on where can you have a room that's okay with this guy being the highest paid player, but not the best player on the club?
That's the weirdness of it. And the Hawks are back tonight in New York, so Trae Young gets to see his kids, otherwise known as the New York Knicks.
Trae is balding.
It's time to wing it. Presented by WNB Factory. Serving up Atlanta's best wings and burgers with over 60 locations. Find yours at WNBFactory.com.
Your winging it idea answers will come to the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. We told you that Ted Turner and Jane Fonda got engaged on this day back in 1990. So I want to know who your number one power couple is in your power couple rankings.
Eva Braun, Van Hitler.
There's power there. Number one. It's hard to go against the Justin Timberlake, Jessica Biel duo. Looks, talent. They both come across as really nice and likable, which is also a little added bonus. So that would be number one on my couples, my power couples rankings, Biel and Timberlake, Lowe's.
I have one that if you put that out there, I may have the trump card here.
Mm-hmm.
Blake Lively, Ryan Reynolds. We're talking good-looking couple, mm-hmm. Hollywood star, mm-hmm. big-time money. That's pretty strong for them, too. There's a reason why Ryan Reynolds is on commercials all weekend long with all the different stuff he's involved in.
More abs, Biel and Timberlake, Lively and Reynolds.
Oh, that's going to be close.
Yep. Brandon Joseph, you're number one in your power couple rankings?
Nick Cellini and Chris D'Amino. So cute together.
They do have a radio love. Dan Matthews.
Now, is this still together and still alive?
Hey, do whatever you want. Past, present. There's no rules.
All right. All things considered, I'm going to go Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne.
Okay. That's fine. Probably wouldn't win the looks competition, but there was something
they
there.
They both make moves.
They made money moves. Brian Hoyt.
Jay and Beyonce.
You know they're wrong. They hate each other.
Yeah, but they have good sex.
I don't think so. I don't think they've lived together for
years. Really?
Yeah. Since Becky with the good hair, I don't think those two have been anything but a business arrangement.
Doesn't that make the sex better if you haven't seen each other in years?
But I don't think you have sex if you're ever together. Like, if you're never together, it's hard to have sex.
Hate sex is just as good as love sex.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you, but I'm telling you, I don't know that those two have been in this. Like, Bill and Hillary have been together more recently than Jay-Z and Beyonce. Just my opinion.
I think that they're there for... They're those couples that are there for photo ops. Take the photo op, then move on and do whatever you're doing.
I think Beyonce put her foot down. I don't think the foot ever came back up. You guys can send your answers to the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed, the number one power couple in your power couple rankings. Friend of the show, Brooks Austin, joins us in 15 minutes to talk about Heisman chances for Stetson Bennett. But coming up next, Georgia seems to have their best show up consistently on the biggest stage. And I fully expect that to happen again on New Year's Eve. We'll talk
They're not going to do anything.
Fuck.
How negative of you.
We'll talk about their best next. Happy holidays from all of us here on The Fan. Chuck and Chernoff with you till 6.
Yeah, I will be actually honoring the birth of Jesus.
Well, thank you for sharing. Carlos is in for the King, who's again under the weather.
Not too much longer now.
For Chuck?
No.
Oh, I thought you knew
Jesus.
Something. Oh, God. I thought you had some news right there. We're with you till 6, and then it's the Front Row's Audio Fun Bag with Dill. So we'll look forward to that. Friend of the show, Brooks Austin, in 5 minutes to talk about Stetson's Heisman chances.
Zero chance of that.
All right, we'll move on from that. A fresh big dog that could help in the playoff, and some transfer portal fun with Brooks coming up here in 5 minutes. The 3 o'clock hour of our show is brought to you by This Stuff Matters. Listen to the new This Stuff Matters podcast posted at 680 The Fan's website, right under the podcast header, or at thisstuffmatters.net. Lois, I don't think it's a coincidence that on the biggest stages that Georgia has been in over the last couple of years, their best have shown out. Now, if I just wanted to do it based on this season, like look at what just happened Saturday as an example. Now, Georgia was much better than LSU, but that hasn't stopped weirdness from happening in college football this year where somebody is so much better than the opponent loses the game because they're best. They don't show up. For example, how about Jalen Carter Saturday? 4 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, a sack, a PBU, and a memorable play holding up the other team's quarterback like he's a baby for a Sears picture around the holidays. So you had that going on. Brock Bowers seems to show up in every big spot they need him. He'll have games where he's quiet, 2-3 catches, and you're like, no big deal. Because Saturday against LSU, 6 catches, 81 yards, and a tutty. Ladd McConkey, 5 catches the other day, 69 yards, touchdown. Stetson Bennett, ho-hum, 4 touchdowns in the first half. And then there was the entire backfield. Kendall Milton, fresh legs, looked great, 113 yards. Dejon Edwards, here's another 77. Kenny McIntosh, here's 68 all-purpose with a couple of touchdowns. Then there was Chris Smith on the defensive side. Whether it was the interception or the heady play, when everybody else thought the play was over, to pick up that blocked field goal and run it back for a touchdown. I can point to almost every big game, whether it's Oregon, Tennessee, if you want to call South Carolina a big game, LSU, and I could give you a list of Stetson and Brock and Ladd and Darnell and the running backs and Jalen and Malachi Starks and Dumas Johnson and Chris Smith, and the list goes on and on. Like, their big players step up and show up on those big stages. That's why I would expect them again to do it on New Year's Eve with 20-plus days to prepare. To me, if they lose that game, it has nothing to do with them not showing up.
It's college football, and every now and then you're going to have a team that's going to sleepwalk, and sometimes that gets you beat. And when it comes to Georgia, they just don't seem to have that happen very often. We can point at the Missouri game and say, okay, didn't have a good start, had to make up those points, had to take care of it. But when it comes to the big ones, that Oregon game felt over at halftime. When I was in that stadium for Tennessee, we're looking around at each other as it's pouring rain going, let's see them pour it on Tennessee, because Tennessee couldn't do anything. I believe the score was like 24-3 at half. It's been the theme. And the biggest guys on the biggest roster tend to keep showing up and making plays when it really matters in these huge ball games.
I'll go back to even the playoff a year ago. Remember what Stetson did against Michigan?
It was over after four drives.
Yeah, he was nearly 70% completions. He had 335 total yards in a playoff game and three touchdowns. That was in the semifinal. Then in the championship game against Bama, they weren't gaudy numbers. And I also think Georgia sort of played it close to the vest throughout that game. Stetson finished with a 65% completion percentage and 224 yards, which doesn't jump off the page. He did have two touchdowns, but let's be clear, at the most important time of the game, Georgia's trailing 18-13. There's 10 minutes left. Stetson went 3-for-3 with 68 yards, including the 40-yarder to A.D. Mitchell that gave Georgia the lead. On the next possession, he only got to throw the ball one time, but it was a 3rd-and-1 that he hit Brock on the 15-yard touchdown. So in the biggest moment of the biggest game of his career and his life, he was 4 for his final 4 for 83 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's just something I expect. If it doesn't happen, I will be more surprised. And that's got to be a very comforting place to know that your best players on those stages don't shrink.
By the way, back to that Michigan game, it was 27-3 at half.
Right.
We all knew it was over. And so would I be surprised if they did that to Ohio State? Absolutely. Ohio State's a good football team, but we've seen that when they run into physical football teams such as Michigan over the last 2 years, Oregon last year ran for 269 yards on them. If Georgia's able to do that to Ohio State, it's going to end up being a very long night, because you got to take something away from Georgia's offense.
All right, with that in mind.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.
And let's bring in friend of the show, Brooks Austin, lead editor for Dogs Daily, also the film guy on YouTube, who's kind enough to join us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. Brooksy, how are you?
What's happening, gentlemen?
Well, Stetson Bennett's week just continues to get better as he gets ready for a trip to New York City, and it feels like a long shot. And I know there are a million reasons why somebody would say C.J. Stroud or Caleb Williams. Sell me, though. How could Stetson pull off this upset in the Heisman voters' mind and win the award?
Look, I think if we're going to do that, we have to come to a conclusion, at least to somewhat a degree, of what the Heisman means to you, or what it means to be the Heisman Trophy. Because in 2000, and I think it was 1 or 2002, Jason White meant the Heisman, which in 2002 meant best player, best football team on the national title contender during the BCS era. And now it's kind of morphed into, if you get to at least 9-3 and put up video game stats and look like the best player in college football, then you get the award. So is the award best player in college football? The best player in college football is none of these quarterbacks, but the best quarterback in college football is Caleb Williams, so he should get the award. But what is the award? Does the award have to be connected to team success? Because most of the awards history, I would say about 85% of the awards history, is directly tied to team success and individual success. It has to be a combination of both. This is college football, not the MVP in the NFL. So if I were to make a case for why does Stetson Bennett deserve the Heisman Trophy? It's because he's the best football player on the best football team, and he is the primary reason why that offense or that unit is successful.
Well, let's go back 20 years, Brooks, because I think about Carson Palmer and how nobody stepped up. And finally it was, well, Carson Palmer had a finishing kick on national television against Notre Dame. We'll make him the Heisman Trophy winner. Every single else of the rest of these quarterbacks, you had a failure against Michigan in your final game. You ended up losing your final game to Kansas State. Or you can go to Caleb and say, man, that was a dog of a game, and Utah put it on you guys in the second half. Stetson Bennett has the finishing kick, but yet he doesn't have exactly the crazy numbers that some of the other guys do.
It's funny because, like, I remember Trevor Lawrence getting invited to New York, right? And I don't remember anybody kind of scoffing at that one. You remember he won his national title as a true freshman and then started two consecutive years. I think his sophomore year, he got invited to New York with eerily similar stats to what Stetson Bennett has, right? 3,400 yards passing, maybe a couple hundred yards rushing, and 25 total touchdowns. But because he was 6'5", blonde-haired, future first-round pick, five-star, I don't think people scoffed at the idea that he was there. But because of the story, because that he simultaneously in 1 week is going to win the Borlesworth Award, which is awarded to the best walk-on or former walk-on in college football, and then somehow catches a flight to New York, I don't think that necessarily sits well with people. And I will tell you this, that, like, outside of the Bible Belt down here in the Southeast, national writers, they don't really give a hoot about Georgia football. I don't mean to tell everybody that, but it ain't like you guys are wiping the floor with all of the awards elsewhere. I mean, Chris Smith did not win the Nagurski the other night. Will Anderson did. Why? Because national beat reporters elsewhere are like, oh, yeah, it's still Bama. Well, Georgia hasn't quite reached that it's still Georgia mold yet. I think eventually they'll knock down those doors when it comes to the postseason awards, but they've never taken these home.
Brooks Austin is with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line, but I like your point there, right? I don't know that the voters are going to dig in, sadly, to this award or the numbers, the context of the numbers, you know, beyond just looking at a box score. And here's what I mean, Brooks. Like, it's odd that it's being held against Stetson, that his team has won so many games in a blowout fashion, but he's not being given credit for being part of the reason they were blowing these teams out in the second quarter, and he didn't see many end of games and fourth quarters. So I heard this one a couple of days ago. Well, Stetson hasn't had a Heisman moment. My response is, when you're up by 10, 20, 30 in the fourth quarter, you're not going to get a Max Duggan running down the sideline for TCU against K-State. So, like what you said, what's the award? Well, there's no Heisman moment attached to Stetson because his team has won by blowouts almost every week.
I mean, yeah, they've been, what, 17.5-point favorites in every football game at least this year outside of the football game to start the season. I think they were 12.5-point favorites against Oregon. They've handled business outside of the Missouri game all year. So what is Stetson Bennett's Heisman moment? I don't know if he has one except for 19 for 24 for 240 in the first half against LSU, up 35-7 going into the half. That's pretty damn good to me. That's good enough, I would say, for a quote-unquote Heisman moment. But, no, they haven't played any big-time tight football games against really top-ranked football teams because, well, they've been up three scores in the third quarter against Tennessee, and they've been up four scores against LSU in the second half. So, no, he doesn't have those. But I think when you look at him and when you just box score scout him against all the other quarterbacks, which is what writers do when they award these awards, not grinding tape. Come on, right. Get out of here. When they're sitting down doing this, I think it all boils down to total touchdowns. Stetson Bennett did not throw enough touchdown passes this year for people to acknowledge him as a threat because all they see is, oh, well, he just must be on a good football team. Everybody else is doing it. Must still be Georgia because he's not throwing the football. When he's still, I mean, he's like top 10 in the Power 5 in yards thrown. So, like, the guy's putting up numbers. He's just not putting it in the box.
Brooks Austin is our guest. And, Brooks, I want to go back to this because the recruiting has changed. There's now a national brand where Georgia can go out to California and get any of these kids. But it hasn't, and it always is behind, it hasn't resonated with general college football fan. I remember having to tell my friends back home about, watch this Roquan Smith guy. Look what he's doing. I remember having to tell Oregon fans at the tailgate when they were like, hey, tell us what we should be looking for today. I go, you haven't seen a Jalen Carter anywhere near the Pac-12. Watch him play today. There's stuff like that where the brand of Georgia is out there, but the individual view of Georgia as far as how great they truly are, I don't think has resonated with the total amount of college football fans and mostly college football writers out there.
I think a lot of people have to see it. Like, it is kind of one of those you got to walk up on them kind of deals. Like, for years, Alabama, you just assumed they were dominating everybody because they had the best players. And then you walk up next to them and see them next to a Pac-12 team, and you're like, oh, no. They don't just have the best players. They have the biggest players. They have the fastest players. They have the strongest players. They're not just really good football players. And that's what Georgia has. I mean, if you would have just seen, even in the LSU game, that's an SEC opponent with 4 and 5 stars over there as well. Just the physical differences in size between one football team and the other is relatively flabbergasting. And I think the moment an Ohio State fan or the moment a Michigan fan gets to actually like see that up close and not necessarily just on TV, then they'll be like, oh my, because you know who always has that oh my moment? Every single Big Ten, Yahoo, big head that comes down here, and then they see Michigan get punched in the face mask for 4 quarters, and they're like, oh, wow. No, they weren't ready for that yet. No, it takes a while. It takes a long time of recruiting big, physical, cornbread-eating folk.
Brooks, let me ask you about the run game, because while all the talk has been about Stetson and the other talking points, boy, the run game over the last 5-6 weeks has really become something I think Georgia has to feel great about. This past week, it was a very fresh-legged Kendall Milton, who's been banged up, but he looked great. We know what Kenny McIntosh has done. Dejon's played his role beautifully. Like, I don't know what the order's going to be and how they're going to, you know, distribute the carries, but I think Monken's got to feel great about what he's got now in that 1-2-3.
I thought it was awesome to watch them last week. Kind of, they've been a counter football team all year. I mean, I think they ran counter like 18 times against Tech. I mean, it was the play. All their play action was built off of it. It was pretty much the emphasis of the offense. And then against LSU, they were like, I think today's going to be more of an inside zone day, which is much more of like a downhill run. Not necessarily as much patience and vision and then short burst and acceleration making guys miss. This is much more of like sticking in a hole, put your foot in the gas, and let's just go. And that's exactly who Kendall is and who Kendall has been in his career to date. So I knew from Jump Street, kind of just seeing them in the first couple of drives, kind of emphasize the run style that they were that day, and kind of knew it was going to be a great day for number two. So I think those are the things about Monken that I've always kind of admired. Who's he going to be next week? Who's he going to be a month from now? I don't really know. What's the offense going to look like? You never really know. It's very, very dependent upon what does the opponent do well, what do they not do well, and then let's make them do what they don't do well for a whole lot of this football game. Whatever they find out Ohio State doesn't do well, that's what they'll do, long story short.
Brooks Austin is our guest. One last thing for me, Brooks, and this is meat on the bone for you. You're going to love this because I saw you tweeted this out. It caused me to go back to watch the football game, and I go, man, he's right. Georgia at one point wasn't even designating a mic. They're just saying, this is what we're going to do offensively, and you're just not going to be able to stop it in the run game. Talk about what you saw on tape where you went, wow, these jokers are not messing around.
So it was funny, like, against Tech didn't do a bunch of, like, pre-snap movement. They just kind of lined up and played football. And Georgia did the same. They didn't even call anybody out. They just kind of lined up and went to where they were supposed to go. They didn't even communicate. I mean, they were communicating all verbally with code signs and code words and all that good stuff. And then you see them against LSU, and it was like, all right, let's find that number 40. Everybody find that number 40. Where's he at? Harold Perkins. All right. Everybody just point at him. Everybody knows we're going to him. And if you're on the away side of him, you're all by yourself. All right, ready, break. And that was the game plan for 4 quarters. And they just leaned on him, man. I like seeing this team kind of morph every single week. And it's not normal. It's definitely not normal. College football teams and coaches do one of two things. The really, really good ones, like Lincoln Riley, they do what they do. You got to stop what we do today. No matter what, when you play USC, you got to stop USC and who they've always been. You got to stop Lincoln Riley. Well, when you play Georgia, you got to beat whatever version of Georgia showed up that week schematically, on top of the fact that you got to beat Georgia's players. And it's really hard to do that. It requires great coaching, and it requires really, really smart football players from top to bottom.
Brooks, one last thing for you. Transfer portal. I saw you had some stuff on some receivers Georgia's chasing. What's the latest there?
Yeah, I'll give you two names, Ra-Ra Thomas and then, Dante from we're just going to call him Dante from Kent State. Dante from Kent State is another one you need to watch as well. He's like a world-class FCS talent. He's broken a bunch of records down there at Kent State. And then Ra-Ra Thomas from Mississippi State are the two receivers. They're the only ones who have public offers that I've seen on Twitter that are in the transfer portal. So, ding, 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 if you're listening at home, your coaching staff just kind of told you what they need and what they want. They clearly want receivers. All right. It's the only ones they offered publicly that we've seen on the timeline. So there you go. Be looking out for receivers in the portal. And then outside of that, man, I think you're going to see we saw Bill Norton hit the portal today. I think you're going to kind of be mum's the word in terms of exits, potentially till the second window of the portal, which is great. Your team's playing for a national title, which means guys are still engaged. They're not worried about what their next destination in terms of school is.
And Dante Cephas, by the way, is the Kent State kid that Brooks is.
Cephas.
Hell of a job.
Dang it.
It's, hey, listen, you did a good job. Brooks Austin, editor of Dogs Daily, the film guy on YouTube. Brooksy, it's great catching up with you. We'll talk to you again next week.
No doubt, gentlemen. Y'all be good.
See you, buddy.
It's like he gave up a hit in the ninth is what happened.
It's, you know what? But he scattered.
It had a perfect game. Right. Everything was good. And then, like, Dante.
It's okay. Mm. His pitch count was high. It was on me for probably not going out and giving him a rest with a chance to kind of catch his breath. Coming up next, my annual holiday reminder for Braves fans who want to believe. Sometimes I hate this show. I really do.
I don't miss the Christmas music.
For Braves fans who want to believe these juicy off-season rumors, we'll talk about them next. Sometimes I hate this show. I really do.
I don't miss the Christmas music.
Chuck and Chernoff on the fan. I'm Matt. That's Scrooge Los, who's in.
I stand by it.
For the king. Charles, under the weather, hopefully back with us tomorrow. We're with you till 6 o'clock. That's when the Front Row's audio fun bag will take over. So you want to listen here on the radio. But I would also tell you, have that app ready. The 680 The Fan mobile app. You can stay connected to it for all the latest news going on, your favorite fan shows. On the fan app, driven by Beaver Direct, the fastest and easiest way to shop online for your next vehicle. Visit Beaver. ToyotaOfComing.com to see what wow really means. Download the fan app now in the iTunes and Google Play store. So I said earlier when I was doing the crosstalk with Wiley Ballard and K-Mac after the Braves clubhouse report that I know Braves fans are starting to have transaction FOMO. It's just normal. You see other teams doing things, some big, some small, especially your rivals in the division, and fans get FOMO, and it's understandable. Because you don't want to think back to the part of the season while the Braves were signing all their young guys because you had games to look forward to. But the Braves did make a huge move when they signed Michael Harris long-term and Spencer Strider long-term and Austin Riley. We've been over what they've locked up. But it's my annual reminder that the rumors you're reading are once again 99% wrong, because the Braves remain the most buttoned-up organization in sports when it comes to keeping stuff private. The only time anything has ever gotten out, it just so happened a fan bumped into Yasiel Puig.
Unesel Puig.
Coming out of the Omni Hotel. Because he was 6'5" and 240 pounds. They're like, that dude looks like somebody. And Alex is like, well, can't keep that one a secret. And the Braves ended up not signing a Puig because of he tested positive for COVID. But everything else they've done, they've told us when it's happened. And that's just typically how it's been. Well, I remember we were sitting in the control room the day the Braves signed Josh Donaldson before our show, and we're like, what just happened? The Braves just signed Josh to 1 year and like $20 million. The same thing when they signed Will Smith. I was watching football on a Friday night at about 11 when I got a Kenley Jansen press release from the Braves that they signed the former Dodger closer to a one-year deal. We were sitting in studio talking to Nick and Chris doing a crosstalk when the Braves made the deal for Matt Olson. Do you know how we've been informed on all their moves? They tell us. It's not because you're going to get John Heyman or Jeff Passan, or any of these baseball insiders giving you anything. In fact, Los, did you happen to see what came out on Sunday night from Mark Feinsand of MLB.com?
No, not at all. What did he have?
So this tweet came in at 5:58 on Sunday night when he said, the Athletics appear to be getting close to trading catcher Sean Murphy, per a source. The Braves are considered the front runners to acquire the former Gold Glove winner, though other teams remain in the mix. And I saw that tweet and went, now, that's a weird one. But less than 45 minutes later, Mark Feinsand tweeted, update on Sean Murphy. It still appears Oakland is close to a trade, but the Braves are not, in all caps, going to be the acquiring team. Now, I could have saved him the 45 minutes because just the sheer position of what he tweeted, the Braves love Travis d'Arnaud, who's got another year. They love what they have in a very cheap bat in William Contreras, who's a backup catcher and can DH. They also still have Manny Pena under contract if they don't move him for 1 year and $4.5 million. Stuff like that drives me nuts because you know that ish didn't come to the Braves. A, they don't leak stuff. B, that would have made no sense. And C, they have other things they need to fill, but they were going to trade assets for Sean Murphy. Like, I saw that and shook my head thinking, the national baseball folks still don't get it. You can't put this stuff out if you're getting it from an agent, another team, because if it's about the Braves, it's largely not true.
One of the most impressive things about the current regime, and this goes back to what Alex Anthopoulos has told us on the air, and then when we have some discussions about, you know, kind of their processes, he talks about how each offseason he has people of his staff, in part to just kind of get used to how this works. Hey, or give me a dossier on a player that you want and somebody that we should try and acquire. You know, try to sell me on that as part of what they do. Here's the thing, though. You never find out about any of them. It's something they do internally, and they play it out, and they war game it, and then they kind of see where it goes. I'm fascinated that they do it. I'm even more impressed that we never hear any of those players or anyone they bring up until it happens and they're signed or they're traded for.
When they make a move, and they'll make some moves, I don't know how big they're going to be. Remember, the Braves are bumping up against this tax threshold, which they'll go over. I don't think they're going to have a problem playing the 20% right off the bat because, they're bathing in money. So once again, though, it's weird, Los, how this has happened. It went from 4 or 5 years ago to the Braves won't spend, and I hope Liberty sells, to now that they're spending and they might be a top five payroll as early as this offseason, it's they're not spending as much as the Mets or the Yankees or the Phillies. There are going to be fans that are just not happy, and I understand that. I'm not defending the Braves on this. I'm just saying the same thing I've said every day. You're not going to have an all-star at every position. If you think you are, you're not being realistic. Even the Mets and the Phillies and the Yankees, you look at their rosters, you're like, where's all that money when you look at certain positions? The Braves might not keep Dansby, and it might end up being something that's going to sound lackluster, like Elvis Andrus, or some combo of Arcia and something else, or a trade they're willing to make later. It's impossible to have what you want at every single position. Braves are one of these lucky teams where most of their positions, they feel like they do have young all-stars.
Well, even the Astros, for as great as their infield was at a time, eventually had to say, listen, we can't get Correa under contract. He's got to move on. We'll have to develop somebody different. The Braves have been fortunate that their offense on the infield has been so good that they even survived a lackluster 2021 when the outfield was so incredibly pathetic for a stretch. That's how great they've been. Is it going to stay that way? Probably not. It's just the nature of what happens. There's always going to be some sort of change in a ball club.
And add to it that when you start trying to kind of manage what you have internally, you never know about the health of anybody, but you have to think what you might lose in Dansby, you probably get back production-wise in Ozzie and Acuna. If they're Ozzie and Acuna, like we've come to expect, and play 150 games. So that's one of the things to think about, and where they spend the money that they don't spend on Dansby will be the other thing that becomes fascinating. All right, coming up next, front office Los will remind Brian Montrevious-Hoyt that he's being traded to one of the greatest stories in the history of college football.
Do you know the story of Otis Mounds?
I don't.
Mounds? I'll tell you, you're going to have to catch me up during the break here. We've got the first hour in the books.
The best so buck he's ever been.
So dismissive.
Best he's ever been. So not that story. It's another one of the greatest stories in the history of college football.
It's the parable of the magic fish.
Okay, now that I wasn't expecting. All right, so there's, again, a twist and turn to the show today that I wasn't prepared for. But Lowe says Hoyt's bitter behind. We'll have to accept this one. We'll find out what it is next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.